Okay, that verse was supposed to be up there while we were all sitting around so you could look at it. I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well. Same verses we had last week. We are looking at the aspect of God's creation that is right now you and me, humans, people, and a few evidences that really support very strongly that our bodies, these mechanisms, these systems that are all in our bodies couldn't come about by an accidental process. Doesn't matter how much time you have, random mutation and natural selection couldn't do it. And we've been looking at the positive evidences that support that. Just to touch bases with you again on the reason we're spending this kind of time in this study, let's read Romans 1, verse 18 and 19. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness, because that which is known about God is evident within them, for God made it evident to them. There's a lot in that passage. I mean, look at that. God's wrath is against those who suppress the truth. And that's what's happening. And it's not, we think about this is new today because we have all these things going on for the last 50 to 100 years, evolution. No, they were doing that back at the time that this book was written. Men, people suppressing the truth, holding it back, saying there is no God. And of course, they are going against God and going against his goodness. And he says he's made it evident to us. And the way he has, one of the ways he has at least, is Romans 1:20. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature, all these wonderful things we can know about God, they have been clearly seen, being understood through that which has been made. So that we're without excuse. So right now we're looking at some of the things that God has made, and we can see clearly this had to be someone, this had to be an infinite, powerful being that made these things. It couldn't happen any other way. And so we're spending some time doing this. And so we can see this. These things God says are clearly seen. Okay. So what kind of, remind me again what kind of superhuman intelligence you have to be able to look around you outside in the world and figure out that God made it?
Advanced degree in astrophysics.
Mike says advanced degree in astrophysics. And he's joking. Obviously not. All you need is common sense. That's it. Common sense. Common reason. Where we can see clearly, it looks like it was designed. The order and function and purpose, Dan, it is good to see you walking around. Brother, good to have you here. Doing better, looks like anyway. Got that smile on his face. Boy, you've been through a lot. We've been praying for you. Good to see you, brother. Looks like it was designed. We can tell that because of the order that's in everything and the function that it fulfills and the purpose that comes out when we see how things work together. The complexity, we'll be talking more about that today. The information that's there. Information requires someone to be able to create that information. We looked at a couple examples, and they really are just, and any child that looks at these particular things, like Mount Rushmore, they know right off the bat, it didn't happen by accident. This rock formation didn't come together on its own. It had to be constructed, and there had to be a constructor. And that little writing in the sand is exactly what it is. It's not waves moving about in such a way that millions and billions of years could have produced that. No, they couldn't. For so many reasons, it couldn't happen. And children know that. Unfortunately, sometimes, not sometimes, many times, adults don't. And so when we look at you and me, ourselves, this wonderful biological mechanism, we see in it, it looks like it was designed. Richard Dawkins, this was one of my favorite quotes from him, and he's got a few like this. He's that evolutionist that's the most popular in the 20th century. His biology is a study of complicated things that give the appearance of having been designed for a purpose. Common sense tells you, screams out, that's exactly what happened. They were designed. It's not just the fact that that's an appearance of that. complex order and function. We're just reviewing here, by the way, for those that weren't here before. This is, you recognize this, take a minute or two. Complex order, function, and purpose don't happen by accident. Not in this mechanism, and not in this tremendously, wonderfully complex living mechanism that has all these interrelated complex systems that work together for life. Doesn't happen by, can't happen by accident. We looked at the negative things for a number of weeks. We're looking at the positive things right now that show that there's no other conclusion that makes any kind of sense at all, common or otherwise. Okay, sometimes it works and sometimes it don't. Let's try that. Okay. We read this quote. Sir Fred Hoyle, one of the world's leading astronomers and mathematicians of the 20th century, once said before the British Academy of Science, let's be scientifically honest. As scientists, we all know that the probability of life evolving to greater and greater complexity and organization is the same probability as throwing a six on a dice 5 million consecutive times. I gave you an assignment last week. Did anybody do it? Raise your hand if you did. Did you go home and throw a dice and see how many times you could get six, throw a six in a row? If you spent an hour at it, it might have actually happened twice, possibly three times. But it doesn't matter how much time you give. The same probability, at least said it would be greater, and it is, to have dice turn up as a six, would be more than, same probability throwing six in a dice 5 million consecutive times. Never going to happen. Never going to happen. Don't care how much time you got. He also said at that same conference, but let's be intellectually honest. As scientists, we all know that the probability of life evolving to greater and greater complexity and organization by chance is the same probability as having a tornado tear through a junkyard and form out the other end a Boeing 747. Here's your junkyard, here's your tornado. You're never going to get one of these. I don't care how long it takes, how long you take. You're just not. It's not going to happen. That's the same thing with you and me. Chance could not bring this about. God is the only cause of all that we see in the complex order and function and purpose in the universe. We looked at the eye last week. And look at the complicated mechanism this is from one end to the other, the cornea that lets in a certain amount of light, the lens that focuses it properly, the fluid that's in the middle that has an important function, the retina in the back, the nerve and all these things. And we ask the question, what good is a lens that evolved out of nowhere over so many hundreds of thousands or millions of years without a retina? To read the images. Both of these evolved at the same time by chance, just happened to be, and in the right position in that particular creature. I mean, you got to think. We've looked at that whole random mutation and natural selection. It's not going to work. It's not going to happen. What good is a retina without an optic nerve to transfer the image information to the brain? None. So if anything did happen to mutate into something that was basically a beginning, it's just not going to be preserved because it needs the entire system to work. None of these eye parts could do anything without the presence of the others. And Darwin himself said, to suppose that the eye with all its contrivances for adjusting the focus to different distances, for admitting different amounts of light, and for the correction of spherical choramic aberration could, he wasn't a dummy, he knew about these things. Chromatic aberration could have been formed by natural selection seems, I freely confess, absurd in the highest degree. And that's what this world wants us to believe right now. It came together by chance. It's absurd. Okay, any questions before we move on? That's our little review there. Catch up. We want to look at this particular thing that most of us have two of, the ear. It's an amazing mechanism, biological mechanism, and it screams out so loud, I have been made by a wonderful God that knew what he was doing. Let's just look at this guy for a bit. We've probably all seen these kinds of charts. You look into the ear, you've got your eardrum, you've got these little bones that go from your eardrum to your cochlea. Let's just learn a bit about this. And this is not, no test after this. I just want you to see how complex and intricate this thing is, and none of it could have worked if only part of it existed. Look at this thing. It's a series of complex steps. In a series of complex steps, the three parts of the ear are designed to conduct sound through three radically different media: air, bone, and fluid. Not to mention a nerve that goes to the brain, that's something else. But anyway, three different things. You know, long before radio was ever around, that was a pretty cool invention back in the day. I know we poo-poo it now, but hey, the ear has been converting air vibrations into electrical signals. You know, back at the beginning of time, that's what the ear did. That's what the ear was able to do. Now let's look at this. Concentrate with me. Don't let me lose you here, because this is sophisticated, and I want you to see how sophisticated it is. Okay, so you've got these three small bones, the hammer and the anvil and the stirrup. Those three little bones right there connected together, or that are positioned together. And they transfer the vibrations from the eardrum, right? The eardrum, that's the thing. That's why you're not supposed to poke a pencil in your ear. Okay, Harold, right? It's because you might break that eardrum. Okay, he's not going to do it. Vibrations from the eardrum into the middle ear. So the eardrum goes, and these little bones, they do the same. In this particular position that works so well, these are the smallest bones in the body, and they are the only bones that never grow larger from the time of birth. Wow, that must have been an accident of evolution. The only bones that don't grow larger, how do you figure that out when all the other bones in the body grow as you get older? Okay, now, so that's the start of it. Here's this vibration. The bony chamber of the inner ear is shaped like a small snail shell, and that is called the cochlea, that blue thing right there. And we're going to keep zooming in and zooming in to see how this thing works, just a little bit about it. It's all basic stuff. I mean, we're not going into anything complicated. So you got the eardrum, you got these little bones, and that shakes this little part of this cochlea organ that's in all of our ears. The cochlea takes the mechanical vibrations, bzzz, like that, you know, whatever, from the stirrup bone and converts them into electrical signals understandable to the brain. Just imagine evolution trying to figure this out ahead of time. How am I going to get information from around my surroundings into my brain? It's not thinking this way. Evolution doesn't think. It just makes one mistake after another mistake after another mistake, and you're not going to get this kind of wonderful mechanism by those mistakes. Especially when they're drug out over so many millions of years that one is not connected to the other. Evolution doesn't coordinate like a designer can. Okay, now let's zoom in on this cochlea organ for a bit. Inside the cochlea are three canals. Hopefully you can see them there. They're in this spiral shape. The middle canal is a spiral filled with a special fluid. Running within the spiral canal is another fluid-filled canal called the cochlear. Okay, the cochlear duct. Let's look a little closer. In just a second, the stirrup bones causes waves to travel through the fluid, and the cochlear duct bounces up and down. So here you've got the eardrum. These bones never grow, always on the exact side, and it rubs against the cochlea, which makes the waves go in this fluid. Inside the cochlear duct is a strip of tissue known as the organ of Corte. I don't know where they come up with these names, but that doesn't matter. Anyway, organ of Corte, that sounds like an exotic island somewhere, where the ear converts signals at the molecular level. And we're going to see how that's done. It's amazing. So we've got this thing, and there at the bottom are these this cochlear duct, tiny microscopic hairs. You can see them a little bit in this drawing. Line the wall membrane, and when the organ of Corte bounces up and down, the membrane wiggles the hairs. Okay, what happens when this happens? Got these little hairs in here that wiggle. Okay, and zooming in on those little hairs. The wiggling of the hairs causes small molecular trap doors. No, this isn't a mechanism made by man. This is a biological mechanism that was made by God. It's got to be so obvious. causes small molecular trap doors on the tips of the hairs to open and close, permitting electrically charged particles or ions to enter the hairs. In turn, the molecular trap doors are controlled by molecular springs that attach to adjustable molecular brackets. This is all in your ear, just teeny little level in every one of your ears in this cochlear duct. All this is going on, and the tiny molecular trap doors open and close at a rate between 20 and 20,000 times per second. Now you got the different pitches that happen here. As the tiny molecular trap doors open and close at this rate, times per second, they admit charged ions into the tips of the hairs. This movement of ions generates electrical signals that are sent to the brain, where they are processed and interpreted as sound. And we just call it an ear. I mean, it's just a sophistication beyond sophistication. At the molecular level, all this is going on. And everyone, we take it for granted. You can hear me. You know, whether that's good or bad, you still can. I can hear you. Heard somebody laugh just there. And none of that's possible without this sophisticated, interrelated, coordinated, tremendously complex organ. Give me just a second.
Bill, could you speak up a little bit?
Okay. Give me 1 second. Okay. So look at the eye. Look at the ear. Proverbs 20, verse 12. The hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord has made them both.
Amen.
And it doesn't take any kind of genius at all to figure that out. It has to be that way. And I'm glad it's that way for so many reasons. Here's one good reason. Psalm 94, 9, he that planted the ear, shall he not hear? He that formed the eye, shall he not see? So this God of ours, this wonderful God, isn't someone who just happens to be a wonderful engineer. He's a loving, wonderful God that hears everything we bring to him and sees everything about our lives. He knows all these things. He's the one who made eyes. He can see. He knows your troubles. He knows what you need. He knows where you need to grow. That is so obvious that we should see that clearly. And Mike, what you got? Sorry, but you want to go back a bit, or are we good there?
So all these things, according to scientists who believe in it, they all happened as random chance with absolutely no intelligence behind it all. They don't believe there's any creator. They just believe it random chance through random mutations. Once in a while, the mutation got it right. So here's the deal. So this all happened by random chance with no intelligence behind it at all. Today, you know, you could say human beings are pretty intelligent. We even have electron microscopes that can see a single atom.
Yeah.
You're talking about this as the molecular level. Mm-hmm. We can see a single atom now. We can manipulate the atoms to spell words. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Mm-hmm.
So with all this intelligence and all sophistication, why can't we duplicate an ear that was done without any intelligence at all? Why can't they fix me?
Yeah.
And make these things right?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense at all.
No, it doesn't. It betrays the truth there that if we can't do this, how could chance do it? There had to be someone that created all these things. Mike.
I've been a fan of organ music, pipe organ music, you know, and one of the things that fascinates me is how that these instruments are constructed, and they were built before all this electronic, you know, synthesizing that's done nowadays. And you know, the pipes have to be certain lengths. They all have to be tuned. They have to be have to have certain air volume being constantly pumped to them. They have to have, you know, all the actuators and all of this. And yet, all of that is nowhere as complex.
No.
As what we carry inside our head to hear that music that's generated by that instrument. So if you could look at the pipe organ and say, well, there's no way that an explosion happened in a pipe factory and a compressor factory to cause this all to come together into a an instrument that can be played.
Exactly.
How can we imagine that this instrument that we have, that is biologically so precisely, formed to meet our needs? And the fact is, that ear only hears within certain ranges that we need to hear. It doesn't hear the ultrasonic, or the extreme low frequency ranges that have no use for. But animals, there are animals who hear some of those, that can hear some of those ranges, and there's reasons that they do. So, here again, the ear is perfectly suited for us, and it's perfectly suited for every living creature who has a pair of ears.
It is. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. Don.
Yeah, I was thinking, not only can we not make a fully developed, like you make a robot. You don't make a little thing that grows into a robot. You make the robot, right? Mm-hmm. But it's amazing to me, as you're talking about the intricacies of the ear and all this, that grows out of two microscopic elements that come together and then grows into that.
That's
even more astounding.
That makes it more astounding and amazing, and so that it actually has to form. I mean, we build machines; we got to build them fully made. Not God. He starts off with two cells, and not only that, but this thing repairs itself constantly and replaces worn out cells constantly. All these mechanisms we could look at behind the scenes, we're not even talking about. I mean, you just see all this wonderful, amazing things, and we should praise God continually. We're fearfully and wonderfully made.
Amen.
And not be motivated to come up with something so crazily in error. There's a state of mind. It's called foolishness. I'll talk about that just for a minute. Foolishness. It's foolishness to believe matter organized itself into extremely complex living beings that display sophisticated order, function, and purpose. Now, it's not just ignorance. I want to show that. It's not just ignorance is something that you believe because of a lack of facts or information. A lot of us are ignorant about things. We don't know enough. People here probably don't know what the word laser stands for. Raise your hand if you do. I knew there were a few. Okay. Light amplification by stimulated emission of radiation. That's laser. It's an acronym, I think they call that. Okay. Now, you weren't foolish because you didn't know that. You just didn't have information. Foolishness is holding to a belief against all reason in spite of the evidence. That's what foolishness is. And so when God says, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God, he means it. You are going against all evidence, Mr. or Mrs., if you say there's no God when you can see this. Whether or not you can look into the the very small level that we've been looking at, you're foolish. That's all there is to it. And it's not a slam to say that, but that's just the truth, is that the only reason people believe in evolution is because, well, there's a few reasons. They're not being intellectually honest. They're not using common sense. They're being led away on a path which they choose to believe because it doesn't have any consequences. You can go on with those things. But it's foolish to go against this kind of evidence. Yeah, Andrew.
It's partly, the other thing is that sometimes as we trudge, which is a great word, downcast and just going about our lives and stuff, we're looking down and we forget to look up. We forget to look out. When Psalm 19 says that the heavens declare the glory of God and the earth, his handiwork, if we're constantly looking inward instead of looking outward at what God does and see, we're going to miss God, even though we might even believe in God, but we're going to miss some of those greater things because we're not looking for God.
Yes. How can you look at all these wonderful things that God has made? How can you look at all the wonderful things God has done and how you live each day and enjoy your blessings without looking at God? We do it a lot, and that's a shame. Bill.
I like evolutionists to
Jesus performed miracles. And if you were there and saw someone raised from the dead, wouldn't you be impressed with that?
Yeah.
I would be. And yet they saw that, but they didn't believe because they didn't want to. And that's the same thing with evolutionists. They know if you deep down inside their hearts, they know that, that they're believing a lie, but they don't want to believe the other.
Yes.
So they'll cling to this.
Those other great evidences. And as Mike mentioned on Wednesday, those Jews blasphemed the Holy Spirit rather than submit to the common sense conclusion that these miracles could only happen by if God was with Jesus and his apostles. Exactly. Okay. I'm going to give you a three-part common sense argument. You can chew on this for a few minutes if that's all it takes, or you can take the next year and look at it. But I believe it makes sense. It's a syllogism. Those are used in logic arguments sometimes. This one says this. If random mutation and natural selection produced complex life, I mean, that's the theory of evolution. And if complex, did I not have that up there? Sometimes I'll look at the wrong screen here. If random mutation and natural selection produce complex life, let me know if I don't have the right screen up, somebody. And if complex life produced televisions, airplanes, and submarines, and cell phones, then random mutation and natural selection produced televisions, airplanes, and submarines. And some people say, well, no, you're crazy to say that. Not at all. That's a logical argument. The only thing responsible for this is random mutation and natural selection, according to evolution. Then everything that I've made is the same thing, or everything man has made. Random mutation, natural selection made the Boeing 747. It's just an accident. Now, most people aren't willing to make that logical jump, but they aren't willing to retrace their steps and see, look, if there is no God or some other intelligence, then you've got this same conclusion. Random mutation, just an accident. A natural selection formed all the amazing man-made technology too. So, just a logical argument I wanted people to see. So if matter could not have organized itself into extremely complex living beings, someone had to. That someone is God. That's how complicated this question is. Not very complicated at all. That someone is God. Okay, and again, this looking at nature doesn't tell you his name. You have to look further to find out his name and what he wants from you and what kind of love he has for you. Though you can look at nature and see the love of God because of how wonderful it is, and it sustains us. That shows love. Sam.
I don't know how much this comment is helpful for this section here, but the majority of scientists these days in the evolutionary field are going down the path that the Earth was seeded, everything was intelligently, you know, started or designed in a system, right? And it's such a complicated system that no matter what that intelligent being was, he had to be pretty smart, right? Omniscient would be the term. If someone seeded this planet or whatever. So they're going down that path saying someone did. And of course, we're saying that someone is God because that's the logical path in our mind, right? Mm-hmm. But it's just odd is that you can really see their intention at that point if they can say someone did it, but it's not God. And you can see their intentions. They don't want God.
That just pushes the argument out, though. Yeah. Who made those people, or who made those beings, or who made that entity that did that? So it doesn't answer the argument. Fred Hoyle, the guy that had that argument about it's more likely to throw a six on a dice so many million times, he believed, after years of believing natural evolution, random mutation, natural selection, he said, no way, it can't happen, it's impossible. My conclusion is, he says, that life was sown here by some race from a different planet. Answered our argument, right? Not at all. What about them? Well, we had this, I think, for the back, we showed the little spaceship coming down. Well, who made that? Well, then other planets seeded them. Well, who started all this? I don't know. Well, that's where we're at. We're just jumping to the reality of the fact. You've got to answer this question. Who started life? I don't care if it was here or somewhere else. Who made all these amazing things? And that person, that who is God? Yeah, Mike.
Years ago when I studied this in high school, Pete Wilson, in his book Indestructible Foundations, posits it this way. He says, it's either mind or matter that created all things. Mm-hmm. And so, like you pointed out here, if matter could not have organized itself into this extremely complex living beings, then it had to be mind. It had to be some eternal mind.
Yes.
And that eternal mind is God.
Yes. You look further, you read the Bible and read other religious books, but you'll come to the conclusion, if you're an honest person, using common sense, that God, the God of the Bible, Jehovah, and his son Jesus Christ, and the Holy Spirit are the ones who made all things. That's the reasonable conclusion. With a tremendous amount of evidence. We're just looking at a little bit of evidence. We're just looking at the evidence of nature, which I don't like that word so much because it assumes it came around naturally. It didn't. We're looking at the evidence of creation. Sam, yeah?
Sorry.
No, that's okay.
In their logical, what they think is that the planet, as far as the life that's on it, was seeded by some intelligence, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the only area of science that they're figuring out this conclusion. And astronomy and what's it called? Astrophysics?
Mm-hmm.
Astrophysics? As far as how our solar system and how the galaxy and how the universe is organized and functioning and the understanding of physics and the different amazing things that we get on our newsfeed about new discoveries in space, it's pointing towards even design there. It's just like the human body. It's amazing. And so it's like, well, intelligence may have seeded Earth, but they didn't create our galaxy, did they?
Yeah.
So
we're going to look, you're looking ahead a bit there. We're going to be looking at some of the amazing complexity of our solar system and galaxies and universe down the road a bit here. Hope you're not thinking, when's this class going to end? Well, not anytime soon. It's not going to end. Okay. So exactly, Sam, the intelligent, not just in molecular things or biological things, but in the physical universe, it's so clear to see. Okay. We're going to look at a few more amazing systems in our human body that can only have been designed and constructed by God. And there's many more we could look at, but we're just taking a few here. We've looked at the eye, the ear. What was the last one we looked at? It was the ear. Okay, well, now we're going to look at blood clotting. Ooh, that's a fantastic subject, huh? You think, how much do you think about that? I tell you what, you think about it every time you're cut. Even if it's just to keep the blood off some other stuff. But anyway, hey, look, blood's an amazing thing. It's made to flow. It's made to flow in a way hardly any other fluid can. In fact, as Mike brought up, I think, last week, not only does it flow in your arteries and in your smaller veins, but in these teeny, almost molecularly small little capillaries. In a way, you couldn't get oil to flow that way, that small, but blood does. That's a subject in itself. It's an amazing thing that does this. But here's the problem. It becomes a problem when we get cut. Because something that flows so well, when you cut yourself, there goes all your blood. Well, your blood doesn't all drain out of your body for one good reason. There's a very, if it wasn't for a very complicated system that seals the wound, we would all bleed to death. We don't think about it, but that's the way it is. The absence of any one component of this system or any damage to it would render the whole process useless. So let's look at it. Again, no test afterward. Just want you to see how complicated this is. We're looking at creation to see how the wonderful design. Blood has to clot at the right time. When we get a cut, it has to clot at the right time, at the right place, And when normal conditions are restored, the clot should vanish. And that's what happens. So here's a little graphic, kind of a rustic one, where at the top you get a cut, certain kind of chemical things happen we're going to look at until we have this fiber over our wound, and then we have a scab, and then that heals. Well, let's read this. The clot must only form over the wound and nowhere else, or the blood would coagulate, clog veins and arteries, and cause death. So here's a system of this blood clotting that has to be highly discriminatory. Okay, this system, I got a cut. Well, let's go, let's just send out the clotting agents. Well, you clog all your arteries or all the little capillaries that are down there. It doesn't do that. It knows exactly where to work, and it does that with amazing complexity. Here's a molecule. That's not a very good depiction of it. Here's a... some of these biological molecules get so complicated, they come up with these schematics of the model. So you can see a little bit further, because none of us can read these things, but it does help us to see they're so complicated. So here's a protein comes into play called the von Willebrand factor. It patrols the bloodstream and instantly detects the place of an injury. I mean, instantly, because it's all over flowing around in our body. It signals platelets to become entangled in the location of the injury and to release a substance that collects countless others to the same place. So here's all these platelets coming into this wound at the right place, at the right time, the right amount. Meanwhile, you've got this other very complicated molecule called thrombin, another protein that is produced only at the location of the wound, forms to continue this clotting process and to regulate it, really. And if you didn't have one, it wouldn't work. Here's another schematic of what that complicated molecule looks like. There are more than 20 other complex enzymes that are responsible for the producing of thrombin in the exactly right quantities. See, this is something that's got to be regulated. You just got to imagine how complicated our circulatory system is. You can't just throw something at it to heal it. It does it in such a way that everything happens correctly and only that particular wound is affected. The rest of the capillaries right next to it aren't affected. When all is ready, a mesh of protein fibers begin to form a web over the location of the escaping blood. So what happens? Patrolling platelets continue to become entangled and accumulate until a barrier is formed called a clot, and the bleeding stops. Stops. Take it for granted. Here's a molecular formula, a basic one that describes what's going on here. And I don't understand it completely. I know a little bit of it, but barely, because I read about it a bit. But it's amazingly complicated and sophisticated. And it can't come about by accident. This has to have been designed, this process. The process for healing the tissue and dissolving the clot is equally complex. We could spend another half an hour on that. Because you don't end up with a scab on your, there all the time, right? No, that dissolves and tissue grows underneath it, and it's an amazing process. All this complicated system of clotting had to work right the first time, or the individual would either bleed to death or die of a massive body-wide clotting. So here's an organism, has blood flowing around it. As soon as it gets cut, what happens? Well, it clots, right? No, there's no clotting system yet. That's not coming along until who knows how many hundreds of thousands or millions of years later. So all these creatures, they all eventually get cut, they die, and there's no life. Evolution can't answer the problem of where did blood clotting come from. Of course, when this happens, no more life. Again, just another very sophisticated, complex system design and order and function and purpose that we see in everything around us is so complex. In fact, there's a term that I'll introduce you to this fellow in a while, Michael Behe, who came up with this term. He said irreducibly complex. There's too many parts to this system. You can't just have one evolve here and then 100,000 years later another, because it's dependent on this one to work, just like this very complicated mechanism. And that's, of course, a joke. It's a very simple one. But it illustrates a point that's so important in biological mechanisms. This little mouse trap, it's only made up of a few parts, but you've got to have every one for it to function. All at the same place, working together, coordinated. So you look at this mouse trap, and you think about, I mean, you probably haven't spent too many hours looking at your mouse trap, okay, if you have any. Well, you should have. Then you'd know this argument already. You look at a mouse trap, it has a platform, right? It has a hammer there. That's the part that just gets that guy, you know, that's been chewing on your whatever stuff in your garage or in your house. It's got a spring that's attached to this hammer that makes it flip over. We all know how, I mean, mouse traps, you don't need to be sophisticated to understand a mouse trap. You've got a holding bar that holds that hammer down with the spring under tension, but it's no good without a catch to keep it there until that mouse comes up, doesn't know any better. Sometimes they think they learn, but anyway, they don't usually know any better. They grab that piece of cheese and boom, end of Mr. Mouse. The thing you need to understand about this, which is the same thing you need to understand about this body and all its mechanisms, is that if that platform evolved, what good is it without the rest of that other stuff that must have evolved to make it work? Again, we're looking at this mouse trap as if it was a piece of biology, like these other systems we've been looking at. Or the hammer evolved. Well, without the platform and the spring and the holding bar, the rest of it's no good. This thing wouldn't have evolved all at once, you know, like that hopeful monster thing we looked at. Not going to happen. It had to happen, if it was evolution, each little part that would be no good until all of them just happened to, over a series of millions of years, evolved and, of course, were put together properly, and then, of course, had to be loaded. We won't even go there. Had to be set. It's irreducibly complex. You can't explain its existence by a step-by-step process like evolution. Blood clotting is the same way. These sophisticated molecules, the Willebrand factor, thrombin, if they came into existence all by themselves, if they happened to evolve one at a time, they're no good because they need each other to make the thing, the process work, and all the other enzymes that were there. It's too complicated. It's too organized. This kind of system in our bodies just yells out, I've been made by an amazing designer. That's the only way I could be here. It's irreducibly complex. And if you can figure out a mouse trap, you can figure that out. Okay, that's kind of where we're going to be looking at some of this argument here, is that it's not just the fact that things can't come into existence by evolution on their own, but if anything made any sense, they'd have to be a multitude of things by chance that came into existence that worked together some way that there's no intention. Remember, in evolution, God, of course, and his creation had an intended purpose, and that's why it works so well. Okay. It'll probably stop pretty soon, but next week, we're going to look at something, another amazingly complex system. The immune system. The old pathogens. Hey, you know, bacteria, viruses, fungi, a number of other little microbes. One of our favorite subjects this last year and a half, in fact, isn't it? I mean, if anybody is really aware of these kinds of bugs today, it's all of us who have been living through this whole COVID thing. We're going to look at some of the things that God has made in this body and that are amazing, that keep us almost all the time from being destroyed by all these invading critters that would love to eat you alive and not even regret one minute of it. So we'll wait till next week on that one, and we'll get into that. And that'll be the last system we look at, the human body. But it's a good one to cap it off with. Mike, you had a point or a comment?
Yeah,
I thought I saw your hand.
If the randomness of evolution were, you know, the driving factor of science, then the scientists who over this past year have researched and, you know, identified the makeup of the disease and then mapped out the solution wouldn't have had any pattern to go by. But the very fact that these organisms can be manipulated in certain ways and handled in certain ways because scientifically they consistently perform that way, mm-hmm. that's what makes this science of immunology a possibility.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not just, you know, throwing various frog parts in a boiling pot and saying,
no,
you know, hokum pokum, you know, magical cure here. You know, there's a very definite design and purpose in the way that they work.
It does. And that's exactly the way it is with the world and the life that we see in it right now. Okay, we come to the end of our time. Thank you for your participation and questions and comments, and we'll take a break for 10 minutes and get back together. By the way, just since we're out here, we're going to be passing the Lord's Supper. That should be pretty obvious by now. So only if you feel like you need to grab one of those little individual servings. Thank you.